We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Because you're listening to this podcast, we at Blue Wire want you to know this. One, we freaking love you. And two, we want to learn more about you. Help us make more content you'll love by filling out a survey you can find in the description of this podcast. You'll help us out a ton, and you'll have a chance to win a Blue Wire t-shirt, hoodie, or a pair of AirPods. We appreciate you, hope you're staying safe, and want you to enjoy this podcast.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway, lays it in! Zach LaVine!
Crossover. Love it.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by betonline.ag. We've got a survey going around through Blue Wire. You can find that in the description of this podcast episode. Fill that out. Help us learn a little bit more about Blue Wire listeners. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here, as always, with Jason Pat. Jason, Jim Boylan, still the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. Even Joe Cowley filed a hit piece on that, of all parties, saying, come on, Bulls. Get this over with. Fire Jim Boylan. I actually totally agree with Cowley on that. And it makes me think that my stance on this has been a little soft in the past, where I've been like, yeah, I don't really need Boylan to be fired immediately. I just don't want him to coach another game. Well, but like, what's the point of dragging this out? Like, Boylan's obviously a terrible coach. Just fire him. Get this over with. Prove your competency as a leader, Karnišovas. So hopefully by the next time we record an episode, Jason, that's done. And we can start the coaching search process and give us something else to talk about, because it's just ridiculous that this continues to linger. And I wonder what Boylan thinks, too. Maybe he's getting some false hope. Anyways, this is going to be the Zach and Lowry podcast. We're going to do a season review of Zach LaVine, a season review of Lowry Markkanen. I guess, how you doing, Jason? How you feeling?
I'm doing all right. Just before we go into the Zach and Lowry stuff, to address the Boyle and stuff, I feel like some of this was also kind of spurred on by all these candidates with the Knicks. The Knicks, like, a bunch of names have come out. Like, I think we're in, like, double-digit numbers. Like, so the Knicks are going and doing this coaching search. They got names coming out, like Ime Udoka, who supposedly is the Bulls' frontrunner, was reported as a Knicks candidate. And obviously, the reporting for a long time has been that Tom Thibodeau will be the Knicks coach. I mean, who knows? Maybe that just smokescreen stuff. But I think that all those names coming out, I think Kali mentioned that in his column, just like the Bulls shouldn't like be sitting back and waiting while like the Knicks are doing their own search. And I know our guy, Matt at Bloggable, has been really hammering this hard. And like, I'm like worked up and like angry, but I mean, you do have to wonder like how long, like, okay, Karnišovas says that he wanted to, whatever, like meet face to face with Boylan, kind of go over film, stuff like that. Like, I guess, like, how long do you need to do that? Because I believe he is now in Chicago. You get a week to do that, and then maybe next week they'll fire him. I don't know. I know Boylan was part of like that. I think he joined that peace march that was in the city on Juneteenth on Friday. So he's still doing stuff with the team, obviously, and acting like he's coach. And it is weird. I'm not angry yet. Hopefully, if it does keep dragging out, though, definitely we'll start to maybe get a little angrier. But enough about Jim Boylan. We talked about him last week. Go listen to our Jim Boylan pod for more thoughts on Jim Boylan last week. Let's talk about Zach LaVine and Lowry Markkanen. We're going to do a season in review. Obviously, we're like 6 months away from Bulls basketball again, so we had a long time. So we're going to do some season in review of players. We did Boylan last week. Now we're going to start doing some of the team. And we're going to, and obviously Levine and Lowry are kind of linked together since they both were basically the quote unquote gems of the Jimmy Butler trade. And it was definitely, obviously Lowry, kind of a disaster season. Zach LaVine started the season poorly and then kind of came on. I think he just missed an all-star berth. He was definitely one of those fringe candidates there. Him and Bradley Beal were kind of lumped in together. But Zach LaVine, we've obviously talked a lot about Zach LaVine on this podcast as the Bulls' best player, where he sits in terms of a player. Like, do you want to build around him? Like, how good is he on like a championship team? And I guess if we just go look at his season, like I mentioned, he had a really slow start. And I think that really cost him probably in that all-star voting. He did come on strong, and we saw him have some great games. I mean, their Hornets game, we saw him bail the Bulls out multiple times, and he ended up having a career season. He put up something like 25 points per game, 25 and a half points per game, I believe. Like, his efficiency was pretty good considering his usage and considering just how much the Bulls needed him to do stuff. Let me see, 25.5 points, 4.8 rebounds. His assist did go down to 4.2 assists. 45% was a bit down from last year, but part of that was because he started jacking a lot more threes, 38% on 8 threes a game. And considering the degree of difficulty, that's very good. So, like, Zach LaVine, I've mentioned this on this pod before that I feel like I've gained a little more appreciation of Zach LaVine as a player. He's only making like $19 million a year. He's on a pretty good contract. And I think we're both kind of in the same boat as we think Zach LaVine's a good player. He's just not the guy you like need. He can't be your best player. He's not going to be that guy to build around. I think, and there's some more stats I'll bring up later to kind of prove that point. I think this year just kind of just hammer that point home again, that he's a damn good player, but he's probably best as like a high level number two, number three guy, and not just as a guy that's going to lead your team to a lot of victories. Because so far, he has not been to the playoffs. He's not been over 500 in his NBA career. So I guess your general thoughts on Zach LaVine's season, and I guess where he goes from here as a player with the Bull. We'll talk about his future in a bit. Just your general thoughts about his season first.
Yeah, I think like the big trend in NBA basketball today is to be a heliocentric team, which would mean to have the entire team be built around one player. And I think that what we've learned through Zach LaVine's, two and a half seasons with the Bulls so far, is that he just isn't going to be that guy. He's not going to be the dude who you can put the ball in his hands and like every other piece on the team needs to be a complementary piece for Zach's skill set. That's just not him. So like, you know, when you think of those guys, it's like Luka Doncic, it's James Harden. It looks like it's Trae Young, obviously LeBron, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler. The Bulls had one of those guys and they chose not to build around him. But LaVine, I think my ultimate takeaway is that he's a very good scorer. Obviously, everyone knows he's a poor defender. His defensive ability hasn't meaningfully improved, I would say, in his three seasons with the Bulls. He says the right things. It seems like he works hard. I think his issue is more like play recognition in general defensive awareness than any sort of like effort deficiency or even like, you know, athletic deficiency when it comes, or like, you know, size deficiency when it comes to defense. I think he just has generally poor awareness. But then offensively, I've said this a bunch of times on this podcast, but I view his inability to consistently make high-level decisions with the ball in his hands to be as limiting to him in terms of his overall impact as his poor defense, because there's been a lot of players in this league who were mega stars who couldn't defend. I mean, Trae Young is, you know, the obvious one right now, where Trae Young is probably one of the best offensive point guards ever already at 21 years old. Terrible defensive player, probably the worst defensive player in the league, but he's still a positive impact player to a significant degree because he has such great offensive awareness. He's such a great passer and obviously a lights out shooter. And then you have someone like Steve Nash, I would think of as well, as a poor defensive player, but still obviously a star. So LaVine is a lights out scorer. LaVine is a great scorer. He's not really a great offensive player. If you look at any of these all-in-one numbers like PIPM, any of the other like all-in-one numbers too, the Raptor metric by 538, LaVine grades out as like a slightly positive offensive player. And I think that that's mostly because of the role he's been in. I don't really think it's fair to write the book on Zach LaVine as an NBA player right now and say something like, well, we know what Zach is. Well, you know, to this point, what Zach has been is a great scorer on a bad team. And that's sort of like a classic NBA archetype, the guy who puts up numbers, but his teams don't win. We know generally that those guys aren't, you know, that impactful and not that great when it comes to, like, you know, ranking all the best players in the league. So Zach's numbers, I think, don't really capture, you know, where he is in the league's pecking order. But I do think that if he was in a different context where he was used more as an off the ball player rather than an on ball player, that you could see his value skyrocket. Like, if he was in a position where he's running off screens like he's Rip Hamilton, the way the Thibodeau used to use Rip Hamilton, or if he was used similar to the way the Warriors use Klay Thompson, I think that Levine's perception as a player would be totally different. But instead, we got him trying to play like James Harden, and he's just proven that he can't really handle that role. Now, why is he asked to do that? It's because everyone else on the team is so bad. They have no one else who can run a pick and roll or run in isolation. But my general takeaways on Levine is that he's a really good scorer. I mean, I got a stat in front of you, in front of me here, Jason. So there were 15 players in the league, 15 full-time players who had a usage rate above 30%. And Levine is one of those players. And of those players, he ranks basically dead in the middle in terms of true shooting percentage. So Levine's true shooting percentage on the year, I believe, was, 56.8, which is above average scoring efficiency. And he did that while being one of the 15 most high usage players in the game. So that right there tells you that, like, Levine is not a trash player at all. Definitely. Like, Levine is not a guy who I think is wildly overpaid. He is a guy, in my opinion, though, who's miscast in his role and who needs a stronger team context around him to truly be in a position to succeed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I'm actually looking at RPM there. I don't know if RPM recently changed their formula, but, like, he grades out really well on that this season. I feel like I don't remember seeing that all year until I just checked now. So according to RPM, he's now really good, at least offensively. In terms of, they have him listed as a point guard too, which is very strange, although he kind of plays point guard anyways. But I guess according to RPM now, Zach has been was very good this season. But again, I think they might have changed that recently. Either way, regardless, yeah, I agree with most of what you're saying. Like, he, and I think when it comes to the decision making as well, I think some of that we kind of saw bear out. I was looking up some clutch numbers when I was preparing for this podcast yesterday. And again, this is not all on him. This is not, like you said, the talent around him. Like, we thought Tomas Satoransky was going to be, like, a really nice fit because of his off ball and his shooting, which also kind of turned out to be a dud. But, like, he just was not dynamic enough. So often, late in games as well, and just in general, Zach LaVine would just be asked to do so much. The ball handling, so much of the scoring and decision making. But again, look at these clutch numbers. While Zach was hit the 6th most clutch points in the NBA with 109, clutch play is basically 5 minutes or less in the game or fourth quarter in overtime with a score within 5 points. And we obviously know, we saw Zach save the Bulls several games this year, which is ridiculous 3-point shooting and stuff like that. But if you look at the overall clutch numbers, while he scored a lot, he also only shot 33% on field goal and 3-point percentage. He only had 4 clutch assists to 6 turnovers. Lowry actually had 1 more clutch assist. I think he had like 5. And I think we kind of saw that. We saw that in games, especially against good teams as well, where it would just turn into Zach playing hero ball. The decision-making was just not there, just not making high-level decisions. I think there was a game, was it the Raptors game this year? They lost, I think there was a game like back-to-back where they lost like really close games. So I think the Raptors and the Heat, and he played really poorly, I think, in both of them. This was early December. Levine, 18 points, 5 of 19 shooting against the Heat. They lost that game in overtime. The next night, 20 points, 6 of 18 shooting, 93-92 loss to the Raptors. And I believe that was the game that Raptors, where he had a potential final shot, and he like drove into multiple guys and tried to throw up a bad shot. And I think somebody, it might have been like Wendell Carter Jr. I can't remember exactly the play, but I think somebody was wide open if he would have just made the right pass. And I think that kind of thing, just like that bears out in the numbers. That just kind of thing is that just goes back to the decision making, and for the high level guys, obviously hero ball is gonna come into it sometimes, but they also need to make the smart play and the right play. And just too often, that's just not Zach LaVine's game. He's got the mindset of a scorer. When if the Bulls go need a bucket, he's gonna be the guy to take that shot. I feel like there were times later in the year where he did make a few nice passes in crunch time when he was covered. But overall, if you just look at those numbers, the efficiency was awful. He had no assists. And that's not all on him. These guys still have to make shots. If Jim Boylan's basically just asking Zach LaVine to go save them, that'll happen. But again, I mean, that's kind of on him too. And it's kind of something we've seen. The decision making's not there. He gets tunnel vision, tries to play hero ball too much. And it can just be a problem. And that, again, just kind of limits his ceiling. Well, he's a very good offensive player. This kind of stuff just shows why he really, I guess, has been one of the reasons why he just hasn't been a winner yet. He was also like a team worst. I'd have to pull those numbers up again. I think it was like a team worst, like minus 65 in these clutch minutes. So like, and that also goes to the defense, making key defensive mistakes. I mean, we've seen those highlights before as well, where, you know, again, you mentioned the awareness and just like losing his man on screens, or just like losing off the ball and a guy makes a cut and you lose him. It's just a problem. It's just one of the problems with Zach LaVine as a player, because that doesn't mean he's bad or anything. That was one of the problems this season. One of the reasons why the Bulls did underachieve. Like, I don't want to put a lot of this on Zach LaVine, because he did have these games where he would go off and he would save them offensively. But he also really struggled in crunch time while like taking the majority of those shots. So he does have to bear some of the blame for some of these struggles this season as well.
Yeah, and you know, I just brought up that list of the 15 guys who had a usage rate over 30. Of that list, LaVine ranks number 13 in terms of assist percentage. The only guys he's ahead of are Joel Embiid and Donovan Mitchell. And there's some guys on this list above him who are not considered great playmakers. Kawhi Leonard, passing has never been the strong suit of Kawhi's game. It's always been like sort of his one glaring flare. He had a higher assist percentage. You got Bradley Beal on there. And looking at that list, even D. Rose had a 40.5% assist rate with Detroit. D-Rose had some really good numbers with the Pistons this past year.
He did.
You know, almost double what LaVine posted in terms of assist rate, because LaVine was at 21.7. So in addition to, you know, the general scouting report on LaVine, sort of how his numbers stand up in context, we also know that LaVine is always sort of at the center of the team in terms of his relationship with Jim Boylan by being the Bulls' leading scorer and kind of their star player. We saw a lot of sort of passive-aggressive remarks out of LaVine regarding Boylan. I think, you know, LaVine showed that he's not an idiot. Like, LaVine seems like a pretty smart guy. I think he has, you know, he sort of like gets what it takes to be an NBA player. I think for better or for worse, he kind of has the Mamba mentality.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, he didn't back down to calling out Jim Boylan. And I think that you can go over some of the highlights and the lowlights of the LaVine Boylan relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we do that, I'm going to take a quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline. There's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Are you looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. So visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. All right, we are back at Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast, talking about Zach LaVine. You mentioned before the break here, just talking about some of the issues he's had with Jim Boylan. And this goes back to last season, if you remember. I mean, he was obviously very frustrated, I think, just about, especially when they were in that stretch where they had lost, I think, something like 15 out of 16 games. And Zach was definitely outspoken about just some of the issues with Boylan as head coach. And then there was the whole nonsense about like the paying of the fine, offering to pay the fine or whatever. And that was like a huge storyline. And oh, everything was fine. And in the offseason, we heard that they had patched up the relationship and it was all fine. But then we saw issues this year as well. There was when Boylan kind of singled out Zach LaVine and benched him after like three plays in that Heat game where they got blown out from the start. LaVine, and then they had a talk together, and LaVine came back and had the best game of his career with that Hornets game the next night with 49 points and 13 threes and the game winner. Besides that, but just like throughout the year, just little times where Zach clearly showed frustration. We saw stuff with the timeout stuff when we talked about the Jim Boylan timeout fiascos last week, where they would like cut to Zach LaVine and he'd be like, "Why the fuck are we calling a timeout down 10?" And or we'd see him on the bench just like looking just despondent and just like totally like out of it and upset. So definitely a rocky relationship there between LaVine and Boylan. And I have to assume the reporting that's out there about how some players have given feedback about Jim Boylan that hasn't been so good, you have to think Zach LaVine has probably been one of those guys that has not really given the best feedback. I know at All-Star break at his media thing at All-Star break, I asked him kind of a joking question about Boylan helping him with the 3-point contest, and he basically like deflected it. It was kind of funny. I mean, he usually says the right things, but there are times where it slips out where it's clear that he's frustrated. So I definitely don't think the relationship is great there. I would assume he's one of those who has kind of given the negative feedback to the front office, which again, front office, make the move, fire Jim Boylan already. But yeah, and he's not the only one. There's obviously been other guys as well, but Zach LaVine as the best player on the team, having some of these just notable clashes and some of these notable comments, just another reason why Jim Boylan should be fired. But we obviously already talked about that.
And then I think the bigger thing than how Zach fit with Boylan that's going to affect the Bulls moving forward is how Zach fits with Coby White.
Yep.
And when Zach and Coby shared the court together, Jason, you emailed me this stat. Their offensive rating was 105. Their defensive rating was 115. So
bad.
What that tells you is that they couldn't stop anyone and that their offensive games weren't really complementary, right? Like, they're both kind of similar in how they attack defenses. I think LaVine's obviously like a way more explosive athlete, stronger going to the rim. But both of these guys sort of just like to cook on their own. And a lot of times it looks like they're playing, you know, 1-on-5 basketball. So in my opinion, I don't think that Zach and Cody are going to be a tenable pairing long term. One of them probably has to be moved. I think the inclination right now, especially with the way Coby White closed the season, is to say that, you know, Kobe's the keeper, move Zach. But, you know, Coby has a lot of room to grow before you can hit Zach's level, let alone surpasses him as a scorer. So I don't totally rule out the fact that, you know, you trade Coby White and you keep Zach. I think that that's, you know, something that Karnišovas should at least be have an open mind to when he's evaluating the team. But, you know, what do you think on this? Do you think Zach and Coby can work long term, or do you think that one of them ultimately will be sent out within the next 2 years?
I don't want to say they can't. Like, I hate Kobe's a rookie. He obviously had an up and down rookie season, and he started coming on really strong. The sample size that they played with that stat that you brought up, I think it was like 700 some minutes, a decent amount, but still, I mean, just in the grand scheme of things, pretty damn small. Like, I feel like I would like to see them play more together and see maybe with a better coach. But I think the concerns are there, and it would not surprise me at all if in the future you have to decide between one of them. It's like you said, they're both kind of gunners. The defense is obviously a huge issue there. That 115 D rating and 747 minutes with those two on the court together is really awful. Obviously, there's other context that has to be taken into account when looking at these type of lineup numbers, but I mean, that's really bad. That's really bad. And just the way, like you said, the play styles, their defensive ability in general, like I don't think either guy's, obviously, Zach's in the league, has been in the league for a long time at this point. He's not going to become a great defender at this point. Coby White, I feel like he gave decent effort on defense, but I mean, still, he was a rookie point guard, and it's tough. But I don't think he really projects as like a lockdown defender at some point either. So like, if you're looking at those two as your future, your front court or back court of the future, I don't know. Like, they could be a hell of a lot of fun. I said they get buckets, they make crazy shots, and that's a lot of fun. Does that translate to winning basketball? Obviously have some major doubts there. And Karnišovas has said he wants to evaluate this roster. He's not necessarily going to be in position, not going to like just come in here and blow everything up. But everything should be on the table here. You could look to trade Zach LaVine, look to trade. We'll talk about Lowry obviously shortly. I mean, look to trade Coby White. I think fans would probably be very upset if they traded Coby White, but I mean, if there was a trade out there that ended up with Coby White going out and if good stuff came back, I mean, sure, why not? Again, everything should be on the table with this franchise right now for this new front office. The group haven't won anything. So like, what are you giving up at this point? You're bailing on something that has been mostly shit. So like, whatever. Like, that's why anything should be on the table. Any smart exec should come in. And if he wants to make changes, I'm all for it. Like, obviously you don't want to come out and try to make panic moves. But I mean, if there's a deal that's out there that makes sense, maybe trade Zach LaVine, maybe trade Coby White, maybe trade Larry Markin. You might just have to shake things up. Do I think that'll happen this summer or this offseason? I still would be kind of surprised. The way Karnišovas has talked, maybe he's just kind of saying whatever and just like putting on a good face. Maybe he will blow it up, but the way he was talking, it seems like he would like to see this group play a bit more. He was kind of talking up some of these guys, and maybe he would like to see them with the new coach. Again, more points to just firing Jim Boylan. Like, why would you keep this group together with this coach when we've seen the results so far? So I would be surprised if there's a big trade like that with at least Zach. Maybe we'll talk about Lowry in a second here. I would be surprised. Would it Would I be upset if they did trade Zach LaVine? I guess it depends on the return. And I do think, and I feel like we've talked about this before, just I feel like the return on Zach, like I'm not really sure like what the, like his value is around the league. Like, I just don't know what you would, obviously there's just so many trades you could possibly look into. I'm not sure if you can trade what you would get back in any trade for like Zach LaVine for any team that could really use him would really be worth it for the Bulls, considering that he is very good. He is their top scorer. You can argue obviously that he doesn't impact winning enough, that trading him might be end up being for the better if you end up then building around like Kobe, Wendell, and Lowry or something like that. So I don't know. It'll be very interesting. Like I said, I think anything should be on the table.
Yeah, we should move this conversation to Lauri Markkanen. If, you know, longtime listeners of the podcast, I think will remember that we repeatedly said in the preseason that Markkanen was going to be the most important guy on the team, right? That, you know, it was his third year. He had sort of been plagued by injuries his first two seasons. He had shown flashes of being potentially like a primary option on offense, but he still had a lot of holes in his game as a playmaker. Still had, you know, a lot of question marks defensively. So the pressure was on Lowry this year, I think, to show what he was going to be worth in his next contract, which I believe can be negotiated. It can be negotiated like during the offseason. So yes, that's something that
he's eligible for an extension this offseason.
Yeah. So that's something Karnishov is going to have to make a determination on. And then also just like where he fits into the Bulls long term and sort of their overall rebuild plan. And I think that unequivocally, Markkanen was the most disappointing player the roster. He had a great first game in that really disappointing opening loss to Charlotte, season opener on October 23rd. He went for 35 points, 17 rebounds, shot 13 to 25 from the field. Well, then after that, Markkanen was pretty terrible. Specifically in November, Markkanen averaged 11.9 points per game on 33% shooting from the field, 31% shooting from three. He only grabbed six boards, under two assists again. Now, he was a little bit better in January. In January, he averaged 17 a game, 50% shooting from the field, 40% shooting from three. So that was good, but he couldn't really sustain it. Or I'm sorry, that was in... that was in December. I'm getting my numbers crossed up here. But basically, Markkanen had one pretty good month. And otherwise, it was the same story we see out of him every year, which is that he didn't really take a meaningful step forward. His numbers from this year look awfully similar to his numbers from his first two seasons. He again had some injury question marks, right? And it's just like, where does this guy really fit in to the long-term picture is still a major question with the Bulls.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned the injury stuff. Like there were rumblings that like he had like a weird injury, like oblique thing. I think Boylan mentioned early in the year and people thought, well, is that hurting him? Like maybe they should have sat him down. And then later in the year he had, I think it was a hip that kept him out for, what was that, like 4 to 6 weeks. That was like a whole weird situation because they were talking about how like, well, you know, if it was the playoffs, he'd be fine. But like, since now we're just going to sit him down so like it doesn't get worse or like totally tears, like just more just weird injury stuff with him. And yeah, if you just like look at his minutes, like his usage went way down, his minutes went down, the shots down, his 3-point attempt rate and free throw went up a little bit, but the other shots just completely went away. We know like the mid-range stuff, we've talked about the mid-range stuff, we don't want guys shooting a ton of mid-range shots, but his mid-range game like went totally away. And I feel like that kind of hurt him. He shot, like I said, he barely shot any shots from mid-range. His shooting percentage from there was also terrible, but just because he like never really did it. So it's not like he could ever really establish himself there. And just too often, he just turned into kind of a spectator. Like, I think we had a similar, I think, complaint with Nikola Mirotic, where he just was basically just kind of used as a floor spacer and a three-point shooter, which I want him, we've talked about, we want Lowry to shoot a lot of threes. Like, I think the amount, he shot six threes a game this year. I'm fine with around 6-7, maybe even up to 8, but he's also got to get that usage in other places in terms of attacking the rim and taking some mid-range shots like Dirk Nowitzki used to like take. A lot of people like to talk about Lowry and Dirk. Dirk made a killing with his mid-range game and doing stuff in the post and doing stuff down low. Like, while you obviously you don't want to fall in love with mid-range shots, that has to be part of his game. Because otherwise, if he's just going to be a floor spacer, like that's just like a decent role player. And he said he had one good month, which is kind of what happened last year as well. He had the big February you mentioned where he kind of looked like he could be that 1A guy or a 1B guy where he put up like 25 a game. But besides that, the three seasons, like you mentioned, have just kind of looked overall similar in terms of like the advanced numbers, in terms of his efficiency. It's basically been around the same. So just the general stagnation of him and just like the lack of development has been really, it's really a problem. And I think, again, we're going to bring up Jim Boylan again. How much would you put on Lowry? How much would you put on Jim Boylan? How much would you put on, I guess, Bulls teammates just not being good enough? Who is to blame for Lowry just completely failing to develop into the player that we all thought he could? So far, at least.
You emailed me a good Lowry quote, which I missed, and this was from an international outlet. Lowry was quoted as saying, "I had 80 touches per game in the past two seasons. This season, the touches dropped to 40. Don't get me wrong, I had some plays drawn up with me in mind, but it's just different. When I spoke to Jim, we talked about how I should concentrate on getting rebounds and leading the fast break, but it's really hard getting 40 defensive rebounds." So I went back and double-checked these numbers, and in Markkanen's rookie year, he averaged 71.3 touches per game, which was right behind CP3 and in front of Karl Towns. His second year, he averaged 66.2 touches per game, which was more than Zach LaVine, who was the most on the team. In this year, he averaged 45.3 touches per game, which is about the same as Derek Favors. So I had never seen these stats before. I think it is a totally fair call out. We talked a lot about how, you know, Markkanen was used as a floor spacer and not as an attacker. I do think the game plan has something to do with it, but the stat that has always come to mind for me with Markkanen is percentage of baskets that were assisted. And pretty much every year, Markkanen shows that he can't really score unless he gets a feed from someone and he's set up. This year, again, same thing. 73.3% of his baskets were assisted. And when you're looking at like all-star level guys, even front court guys, that number is usually like 50, 55 or less. And for Markkanen to be getting nearly three quarters of his baskets assisted shows me that he's not someone who's going to be able to create something out of thin air. And he is someone who would really benefit from a great offensive initiator at the controls. Like, I think the entire conversation around Markkanen changes if the Bulls would have won the lottery and gotten Luka Doncic. Now, like, you know, obviously the whole context of the team and the franchise changes as well, and Markkanen could really slot into more like of a secondary option, which I think is, you know, where he's meant to be. But instead we keep waiting for him to like be baby Dirk and to be, yeah, you know, the guy who we can build the offense around, but he just hasn't shown an ability to create his own offense. And when that's the case, I think at the end of the day, you're more of a supporting cast guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So like the question is like, is he like whatever a foundational piece? Like right now, it's just hard to say that he is. Like, and again, it goes into like if you want to trade him or what his future is, and we'll talk about that in a second. You're like, anything should be on the table there. And yeah, and the also going to that, the playmaking as well, just not there. I think something, I think he was slightly up in assists this year. I'd have to pull that up. I think it was, but it's still like 1.4, 1.5 assists per game. And he's just kind of been around that. So like lack of playmaking, doesn't get to the line that often, just that kind of stuff where that you're doing stuff on your own, creating stuff out of nothing. If you need a bucket, you need a tough basket, you can't really just give the ball to Lowry and expect him to go score. And we saw some like really ugly stuff this season when he would try to do that, when he would try to like put the ball on the floor and like create offense, and it would just, he would get like bullied, get beasted, get the ball stolen from him. That happened all the time this year. So like that, if he's even going to get close to an all-star level player, like, he just got to get so much better at that with his ball handling. He's got to tighten that up. I know he's been getting stronger, but, and he's obviously, that shows in his muscle, but like he just certainly does not play strong all the time. Like, I know sometimes he's, a few times in his career, he's had like really aggressive going to the basket and dunks, but he doesn't do that enough. So yeah, just so many questions there about, and I think we have to really, I think the Bulls fans just have to change their expectation for level for him. Like, we thought maybe he could be the top guy. Now I think you have to expect more, like a secondary role or maybe the third best player on the team. And that might even be generous at this point because so far he's basically just been, outside of a few months, he's basically just been like an okay role player, just the guy. And that doesn't even talk about his defense. His defense is like a whatever. He's not really a shot blocker, anything like that. So like, it's not like he's going to be a game changer on defense either. So like, he's got to make more of an impact on offense if he's actually going to be like a real impact guy in a winning team. So like, there's still so many questions there. And that's why this season was just so disappointing, because like I said, he ended up having a season where like he, again, got to a similar point where it was last year. His numbers were just kind of down because of usage in general, but it's like, it just ended up kind of being like the same guy. He bounced back a little after that awful start. He had some decent games, but it just ended up being that same guy. And like, so year four, I guess let's looking into that future now, you mentioned he is eligible for an extension. I don't really see how he or the team would like get on the same page on a number there. And there's so many questions now with like the salary cap this year and moving forward because of the China thing and because of coronavirus. And we're not totally sure what the salary cap's going to look like. There are rumors that it's basically going to stay the same this year as it was, or next year as it was this year, which is like $109 million. So I guess that wouldn't have that much of an impact. But I mean, the league is going to have a ton of losses this season, no matter if the season actually finishes or not. The 2020 free agent class is obviously not great. 2021 could be huge. I guess I don't know. The only way I could, if like Lowry would take like a team friendly extension at this point, like I don't really see a reason why he would, unless he just really wanted the security because he has never really stayed healthy. But like you would think a guy like him, like thinking he is a better player than he's shown, that he would want next season as a prove it year. I mean, maybe I'm totally off base on that, but I have a hard time believing the Bulls would put like an offer on the table that would satisfy him at all. So I'd be pretty surprised. I think we have talked about like what would be a number you would expect for Markkanen. I think we came to like $15 million a year, like at most right now. And even that might be a lot for a player who's never really been a positive impact guy outside of a few times. What's your take on the Markkanen extension?
I got one more number here for you from this past season.
Hit me. Yeah.
Lauri Markkanen assists 74. Lauri Markkanen turnovers 81.
Yeah,
bad. And then you look at the per 100 possession stats: 2.4 assists per 100 possessions, 1.4 steals, 0.7 blocks. So basically, on a per game average, Markkanen is getting you an assist a half per game or less every year of his career. He's getting under one steal per game, you know, half a block per game, basically. And then his rebounding numbers are really average. He had a strong rebounding year his second year. A lot of that was due to Robin Lopez sort of clearing guys out. Yeah. Stefano did a great article on that for The Athletic back in the day. He averaged 9 boards a game in his second year. This year, only 6.3. Obviously, per game stats are super flawed, and you don't want to go off that. But even like, you know, his defense rebound percentage dropped 6 points, and total rebound percentage dropped 4 points. So not a great rebounder, that's for sure. I mean, we've been hoping that he could be average at best as a defensive player and as a rebounder, and I think that that might have been ambitious. And then, like, when you got a guy who's getting more turnovers than assists, I mean, how are you supposed to be an offensive focal point, you know? Like, people are getting mad that Markkanen's being used as a floor spacer, but, like, bro, if you can't set up teammates and you can't read the floor, what else are you supposed to be when you were drafted into the league as a 7-footer whose signature skill was shooting? Now, there is one thing that I think the Bulls could do to give him a chance here in a way that he hasn't really been used in the past, and that is to let Markkanen handle the ball a little bit more as a pick-and-roll guy. This year, he had 18 possessions the entire year as a pick-and-roll ball handler. He graded out excellent in the 88th percentile, scored 18 points on his 18 possessions as a pick-and-roll ball handler. That accounted for 2.4 percentage of his total possessions. So the fact of the matter is that they never ran a pick-and-roll for the guy. His second year, he ran 40 pick-and-rolls, so it was 4.2% of his possessions, and he graded out as good, 52nd percentile. And then his rookie year, they let him run 45 pick and rolls, 4.5% of his possessions again, and he graded out as excellent in the 87th percentile. So if you really want to engage Lauri Markkanen, like, why can't they let him run a pick and roll? Especially when the talk the whole season, or the last 2-3 seasons, was that, you know, this is about development, this is about like preparing the children for the road, or whatever bullshit Boylan wants to say. All right, well, then if it's all about development, why can't you let your 22-year-old 7-footer who you traded a great player to acquire, why can't you let him try to flush out his offensive skill set and give him some pick and roll reps? Because in very, very, very limited instances, he's been all right running pick and rolls. I mean, it should at least be enough to pique your interest. And the Bulls haven't let him do that. So in terms of his long-term extension, yeah, I mean, 15 was going to be the number I said in my head. I just don't see a scenario where the Bulls are in a stronger position without Markkanen. Like, at least sign him, as long as you don't have to sign him to a crazy deal, and then trade him, because he's going to be hitting sort of his prime years on this second contract. The Bulls, more than anything, just need talent. And Markkanen, for all of his flaws, is, I think, at least thought of around the league as a talented player, someone who maybe another team thinks they could unlock. So I feel like they got to keep Markkanen around. I also think Markkanen, some of his quotes in the media, the fact that, you know, he became a dad at a very young age, I think that he doesn't really think the same way about things as a typical NBA player. So, like, maybe he would take a team-friendly deal to get that security. Obviously, neither of us know, but I would be shocked if he did. And, yeah, I think, like, either way, Markkanen's not getting a max contract. There's No, well, that was on the table a year ago.
Yeah, we talked about that. We thought maybe that this year would lead him to a max contract this offseason. Obviously, absolutely not.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see what he wants to do in terms of accepting a deal, but I just feel like there's no way the Bulls are going to be in a stronger position without him on the roster, even if you just want to trade him.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, I mean, you'd be trading him at a low point. So, like, again, I think everything should be on the table. You could look at Markkanen trades possibility, but, like, again, his value is basically at a low point this season, after the season. So, like, I don't know what you're going to get back that would actually make sense. Like, I feel like I've seen some people on Twitter talking about, like, just, oh, maybe we should look into getting Lauri Markkanen, because there were also rumors that he was, like, upset with the direction of the team, that he might look to go elsewhere. But he came out on that podcast where he had that quote about his touches. He said, oh, I love Chicago, I'd like to sign an extension. Obviously, we don't know exactly what he's thinking about staying. I'm assuming he's a guy who would also like to move on from Jim Boylan and get somebody else in there to coach. And again, I would like to see him under a new coach as well. And maybe he would be unlocked and doing a bit more, like you said. Who knows? I don't know. We don't know exactly. But yeah, I feel like it's kind of similar to Levine. Like, I just don't know if what you'd get back in a trade would be worth it at this point. So, like, again, Karnišovas and Eversley have talked about Markkanen. They're kind of want to make him like a focal point, and or just like figuring out why he struggled, how to turn this around. And I know Karnišovas kind of spoken glowingly. He's talked to Lowry, and he's, again, it seems like this could all just be just a whatever lip service. They're not going to come out and obviously trash the guy, and maybe they would come out and make a trade. I would also be surprised if they traded Lowry. So I guess ultimately, like, I would be surprised if the Karnišovas did come in and make any like huge moves this offseason with Lowry, with Levine, with honestly anybody else on the roster. And I feel at least this offseason, especially with so much uncertainty going around, like, I feel like it would at least might be worth it to at least give these guys a chance going into start of next season. And then if it goes like to with a new coach, and then if it goes to hell, then you start thinking, all right, you get them some time together with a new coach. If it goes to shit again, now you talk about blowing stuff up. It's just not going to work with this group. Because I feel like still people do probably think that this core is still at least decent. Like, maybe they're not as good as maybe we would have hoped, but they can still at least be better than they are. And again, with Lowry being at his value at a low point, like, I just don't see, like you said, I don't see what trading him now would like get you back in return that would make it worth it, unless you just think if you get someone maybe still thinks he's really good and they put a big offer on the table, maybe. I don't know. Again, I'd be surprised by all this, but it'll be interesting to see. Again, as I said, I will continue to say this. If they do want to come in and blow this thing up, whatever. It's fine. Like, we've been watching shit basketball now for several years. If they want to go in a new direction, I will support them if they make moves that seem like they make sense, and we'd have to see how things play out. But yeah, I mean, it's just tough because it was just a brutal season for Lowry, brutal season for the Bulls. Do you have any final thoughts here on, I guess, Lowry, just is his future with the team? Any other thoughts on Levine or before we wrap up here?
I think that our thoughts on both of those guys are very much on the public record at this point. And, you know, a lot hasn't changed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did see it is funny that you see, like, other fans, their take on Lowry and what they think of, you know, him as a player and what his draft value can be. I saw someone say, Andrew Kelly, who's a Hawks fan I follow on Twitter, good draft follow as well. He said, you know, this could be a good trade, Lowry to Phoenix for their pick.
Oh, and yeah, I saw that as well.
Yeah, and obviously the Suns were not one of the worst teams in the league this year. They're like 10. This is a bad draft. Maybe you're getting like Tyrese Halliburton or, you know, someone of that caliber at 10. But, like, I don't really know if I would like that, trading Lowry for the 10th pick in this draft. But if you're really out on Lowry, then you can make a case for it that, you know, you would rather have Isaac Okoro or Cole Anthony or Devin Vassell. And like, honestly, there's probably going to be a player in this draft who is picked 10 or later who ends up becoming much better than Lowry. But it's just like, who's that guy going to be?
Right,
everyone in this class seems so flawed that it just doesn't seem like a safe bet at all. So, I mean, we're going to have to, you know, continue to monitor the discussion on Lowry. And I think that how he's perceived through the league is going to be really interesting over the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I think that's pretty much it for the Levine and Lowry pod here. Moving next week. Assuming there is no Jim Boylan news, so maybe there will be. Let's cross our fingers. Maybe we'll actually do a Jim Boylan firing emergency pod. But we will continue to talk about, if there's not, we will continue to talk about players. I think we'll probably look at guys like Wendell, maybe Kobe next week. We'll figure that out. But we'll definitely continue to look at some of these core guys in the team and then go a bit deeper into the roster moving forward. Because again, we are like 5-6 months away from the Bulls actually playing another game. We don't know any. There hasn't really been an update about a possible like mini camp in this summer or into the fall. I know that's been talked about to get these teams that aren't going to the Florida bubble, which is supposedly still happening, even though Florida is like a hot mess right now. But these teams that will not be going to the Florida bubble, that are, they've been talking about some kind of mini camp to have, maybe have some like scrimmages with these teams and stuff like that. We will stay tuned on that. Perhaps we'll have some Bulls news on that. But for now, we will just continue doing these season review pods. Like I said, we'll probably talk about guys like Wendell, Kobe, Otto, Chris Dunn, those in the next couple weeks, and go deep in the roster after that. So, as always, shout out to Blue Wire Network and betonline.ag, our great sponsor. Please, all you listeners out there, please go fill out the survey that will be in the description of our pod when it goes up. Just, we want to some information about our listeners, help us build our brand. And there's also prizes. You will enter to win. I believe we're giving away Blue Wire merch. I believe AirPods are part of this. So please do fill that out. It helps us and just learn about more of our listeners. It just helps us grow as a company. So, and then as always with all the other Blue Wire pods, go please check them out. We've added Baron Davis recently. We added Ian Happ. We obviously had the Megan Rapinoe, Sue Bird pod. We've been making huge additions lately at the Blue Wire Network here. So a lot of fun. A lot of fun to see that happening and see us grow as a company. For us, Cast Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast, please rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing on Twitter, wherever you listen to your pods. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those good places. So for Jason and Ricky this week, we'll talk to you guys next week. This has been Cast Considerations, a Chicago Bulls pod. Take it easy.